1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
How the hell are you, Higher Side Chatters? From sunny San Diego, drinking that drink, smoking that smoke, and looking to dive down the messy mind control rabbit hole, I'm your humble host, Greg Carlwood, and I have with me today a San Diego local who I've met several times. We're both good friends with Ron Patton of Paranoia Magazine. I always like to do a show with someone I've met a couple of times. It's a lot more relaxed than it can be otherwise. We did start on Skype, weren't happy with the signal, and switched it over to the landline really early on, bending over backwards, trying to make the best show we can for you people. Before we dive in, we got to hear from August's Money Bomb winner. Of course, you know, half the THC donations get rolled up into what we call the Money Bomb, and I gift that back to a random listener. Big congrats to him with a little over $300, and thanks to everyone who participates. And to play us in, I got a special THC tune for anyone who's a fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, one of my favorite shows. And we'll be talking rituals, religion, cults, torture, racism, patriotism, secret societies, MKUltra, ufology, Bluebeam, the Unabomber, psychic driving, Stockholm Syndrome, targeted individuals, electronic harassment, and more with the conspiratorial queen of San Diego, Marie D. Jones, on the other side.
It's the Higher Side Chats podcast, but you can call it THC. Always talking fringe ideas, digging up conspiracies. Stuff they don't want you to know, it's the stuff we wanna see. That's live here on the Higher Side. It's the place for me, it's my favorite show, where the guests are great and my mind gets blown. The Higher Side. Raise your glass and toast to Carlwood, the host, on the Higher Side Chat Show. That's life here on the Higher Side Chat.
What up, Fireside Chatters? This is William Keegan. I want to start this off by thanking Mr. Greg Carlwood for being such a boss and putting on this awesome show and setting up this awesome community where we can help support him and support other people. Personally, I'm going to be using this money bomb to set up more long words for people and to be giving Greg back something extra. I have longboards at Very Good Longboarding Company on Facebook and Williams Wonder Works on Etsy. Mr. Greg Carlwood, you are the man. Keep speaking the truth against the government and telling what's going on underneath the world in our parts, man. Peace.
That's life here on the Higher Side Show.
All right, people, longboards. Who doesn't love a good longboard? But I do need to find a way to ensure that these messages come in a little bit clearer. But that said, mind control. We all know it's a major staple of the conspiracy world, and why wouldn't it be? If you control the mind, you control the body, and creating a culture that doesn't think things like this are possible is its own ironic form of mind control in itself. And there are many other layers, from the consciousness-controlling war on drugs to the MKUltra experiments, religious cults, marketing, mass shootings, media, and more. Alex Jones might even say there's a war going on for your mind. Either way, I'm happy to welcome back a great author from here in San Diego, Marie D. Jones, who actually was my guest many moons ago when her time travel book with co-author Larry Flaxman, This Book Is From the Future, came out, and that was a great time. She's also authored several other books on her own and with Larry, including 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon, The Deja Vu Enigma, and the reason we're gathered here today, Mind Wars, A History of Mind Control, Surveillance, and Social Engineering by the Government, Media, and Secret Societies. An honor and a pleasure, Marie. Welcome back to THC.
It is good to be back. Thank you.
For sure. Thanks for being here. I really did enjoy this book. In it, you do a great job going over the vast array of branches on the mind control tree. And of course, the history of mind control, like the title suggests, which is very interesting. There's definitely pockets of time, like the MKUltra project or the Inquisition, where it pops up in a major way. But to get the ball rolling here, where would you say we see mind control cropping up in its earliest form?
I am absolutely certain that from the day humans walked the earth, we were trying to find ways to manipulate each other. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's part of human behavior, the desire to control somebody else's thoughts and behaviors and actions and get them to think your way and see your way. I mean, it's a part of interpersonal relationships. I think that's where it's the most obvious to people, mm-hmm. aside from all the, you know, spooky kind of tinfoil hat stuff. So I can imagine that even during primitive times, there were methods by which people were trying to manipulate others. But, you know, in terms of written history, where we start to see it really show up is in ancient times in the form of ritual and in the form of trying to get people to behave certain ways to appease the deities. And sometimes that involved torture and abuse. Other times it just was about a very structured way of behaving that would either get you into, you know, the inner sanctum or not. You know, you'd be an outcast.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the earliest where we see some real evidence of it in our own history.
Right on. And you do spend some time in the beginning of the book talking about ancient rituals and this cultish behavior. And I definitely think that the Abrahamic religions have been the biggest mind control factors in recorded history. But do you think there was ever a time when rituals and traditions were more about actually getting real results for things like a spiritual journey or genuine entity contact? Or do you see it as mind control from the start?
No, I think that, I mean, ritual can be used in beneficial ways and, you know, very positive ways. It can be very beautiful. I think it's only corrupted when the people that are the authority figures are the ones that are looking for a very specific outcome.
Yeah.
And organized religion is absolutely number one on the chart. but I think, you know, there were times when rituals were used to really just sort of commune with nature. And certainly in the more pagan traditions, to kind of become one with the forces of nature, and maybe even learn how to use them for your benefit,
mm-hmm.
or to try to help you grow crops or whatever, you know, and have fertility rites and things like that. So it's a part of our culture, and it's a part of our culture today. I think we all have little rituals that we do in our own lives,
mm-hmm.
and certainly anybody who belongs to any religion today, there's still those rituals that they, you know, that they practice in their own church. It's just when it's used to control and to dominate, to suppress, is where you get into trouble.
Yeah.
And ritual, again, was often, you know, taken to the extreme and used in addition to torture to
mm-hmm.
get people to behave the way that the authority figures wanted, or the way that they interpreted the gods and goddesses wanted them to behave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I mean, religion, even today, we have, oh my God, just look at the news. We have people who think they know the mind of God and what God wants, and they're going to make you fit into that little mold,
yeah.
no matter what they have to do. So.
Yeah, I mean, I really do like the idea of an ancient golden age where we started these types of practices because they worked for the intended purpose, but our understanding maybe has degenerated and it's been hijacked by wealth extractors and those big religions. But it's been messed up for a long time. I mean, you write about the cult of Dionysus in ancient Greece, and I'm pretty sure the name will ring a bell with some people, but tell us about their beliefs and practices. Some of it's pretty out of control.
Well... Dionysus was the god of wine and decadence and love and all those wonderful things that we label today as being bad news or you know, things that you should avoid, hedonism. And I think it's really about your interpretation of the gods and goddesses. So you could take something like worshiping wine or worshiping the god of fertility, and you could do that in moderation to where it's something enjoyable and even pleasurable. But, you know, there are people that are going to take it to extreme, and there's a festival where people pretend to hang themselves. It's like to symbolize their death. They don't do it you know, I mean, they're not really hanging themselves, but it's a symbolic act. I think that was one of the most important things about ancient ritual, is that it was very powerfully symbolic, to the point where some cults, and when I say cult, I really am talking about an actual cult, but these were more religious cults that were focused on the worship of a deity rather than a human being who claimed to be a deity like we have today. But there were many that sacrificed humans or sacrificed children or had blood rituals, and, you know, that's taken it a little extreme. And in their minds, though, they're doing it to appease a certain god or goddess to try to gain favor. And so to them, it's not a problem. Whereas to us, it's like, you people are freaks. You know, you're taking it a little bit too extreme. But if you even look at modern day cults, there are some cults that are very innocuous. People go, they're like communes, you know, and everybody's into growing their own food and just living peacefully and whatnot. And then there's all sorts of extremes that can go to where you have a suicide cult like Heaven's Gate, which was, as you know, in our own backyard. So it really has a lot to do with, I think, the willingness of the participants and the motives of the authority figures at the time.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And you also talk about an ancient Hindu cult that I thought was pretty interesting, based in Shiva worship, called the Aghori, and that had some pretty far-out rituals. I don't know if you remember them, but if you do, can you tell us a little bit about what they did?
Well, Shiva is the destroyer, transformer deity in the Hindu religion, so you can only imagine how far... Yeah, I think these are the ones that had the ritual involving honoring Brahma with, I believe, eating the flesh, rotting flesh of animals and animal feces.
Yes.
Now, to them, it was a way to become enlightened, but... You know, those of us now that maybe know a little bit better and have better ways of becoming enlightened, I mean, that's just disgusting. But the idea was to embody the decaying human, you know, it's like you're embodying death. It's almost cannibalistic to an extent, in that if you can embody death, you overcome it. It no longer has power over you. So you can see the mindset of some of these societies and some of these rituals that they created, which to them, again, in their mentality and their mindset, was supposed to lead to a positive outcome, you know, controlling death, not being afraid of death, overcoming death. But to us, when we look back, it's like, what a bunch of freaks. That's disgusting. You know, we would never do that.
And you mentioned torture in conjunction with some of these mind control tactics. We see those practices a lot in the Middle Ages. Pretty gruesome stuff.
Yeah.
You actually laid out a couple of different techniques that they would use. Can you tell us about a couple of those?
That was not fun to write about. And yeah, we featured a few. You know, I think this is probably the blackest mark on the history of well, one of them. There's been several, let's face it.
Right.
During the Inquisition, during the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, what happened was, and, you know, I'm sorry, but this is the truth. Christianity was the power of the day, and it really was, it took a very dark turn in that the powers that be that were practicing Christianity felt or took it upon themselves to rid the world of those that they felt were not worthy or that were heathens or pagans. And they hated women, okay? And I still see that a lot today in organized religions. I think it's really obvious in the right-wing fundamentalist Christian mentality that we see today. So they hated women. They feared women. They feared women's ability to procreate. They feared women's menstrual cycles. And a lot of times, you know, not just women, but pagans and heathens and anybody who didn't automatically ascribe to the order of the day, they were tortured. sometimes they were tortured to get information. Sometimes they were tortured to get confessions and to sort of bring them over to the other side, you know, come to the dark side, we have cookies kind of thing. But sometimes they were just tortured, because I honestly believe these people were psychopaths. I mean, they were absolute psychopaths operating under the guise of being religious, devoted Catholic,
right.
You know, the Catholic Church has so much blood on its hands throughout our history, using ritual torture, ritual abuse to get people to do what they wanted them to do. And that is a form of mind control. You know, people will say, but that's not really mind control. Well, yeah, it is. Because first of all, if you're being tortured, you're gonna eventually break and do whatever they want you to do. They've modified your behavior, and they've modified your ability to control your own thoughts. But just the threat of torture is a powerful form of mind control.
It is.
So that's why that was such a dark period, because so many people lived in fear, even people who didn't do anything wrong. You just looked at somebody wrong during that time, and they would burn you at the stake.
Mm-hmm. And you also talk about the KKK a bit, and racism is definitely one of those things that I think is adopted by suggestion. And of course, we have a lot of modern racial issues where the pot seems to be boiling over. But I had read recently this idea that prominent Masonic elite Albert Pike formed the KKK just to keep racism alive and people divided. And it's interesting that K is the 11th letter, making it 11, 11, 11, or 33.
Oh, there you go.
You know, a Masonic number. But, I mean, it really doesn't seem like the playbook on dividing people by race has changed much over the years, does it?
Isn't that something? It's 2015, and you think that we would have evolved a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
and we really haven't. Now we just have different tactics by which we, you know, we use politics and religion now, and we use social networking, and we use the media now. I'm not saying we, you and I, right. but the powers that be,
mm-hmm.
As methods to control. So the ritual now has become getting people to accept. This is what I see a lot of right now. Getting people to accept hatred, misogyny, sexism,
mm-hmm.
gender abuse. Getting people to accept all of these horrendous things that as not just normal, but as okay.
Right.
I see Donald Trump doing that.
Mm-hmm.
He's a misogynist. I see so much women hating. And I'm going to put it out there right now on your show that I think there is a third world war coming, and it is going to be between the genders.
Really?
Honestly, you know, now they want to shut down the government because they want to defund Planned Parenthood. Excuse me?
Right.
You know, this provides wonderful services to poor women all over the country. It's insane. But this is all a part of the master manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the status quo. Keep the powerful, wealthy, white, you know, Christian agenda the way it is. And anybody and anything that threatens that, gay marriage, oh, wow, you know, we're coming after you. Anybody that threatens that is going to be chastised, abused, I think even killed. I know you're aware of, this is a different example, but I think it plays into the same thing we're talking about. I know you're aware of all the alternative healthcare doctors that have been dying,
mm-hmm,
quote
unquote. Mm-hmm.
I think there's 9 of them now.
Yeah, I actually just talked to someone who said it was up to 13.
Oh my God. And some of them, if not all, were anti-vaccine, which I am an anti-vaxxer.
Mm-hmm.
And so just the idea that now if you try to step outside of the little box that the powerful entities want to keep you in,
mm-hmm.
they'll murder you. You know, they'll keep you powerless. They'll take away your jobs. They'll take away your rights. They'll take away your ability to have a healthy life. It's insanity. And this is all, like you said, a part of our history.
Mm-hmm.
It's just morphed into a whole different beast, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that is interesting. The thought of, I mean, a lot of people are saying that a third world war could be coming, a huge civil war, a huge massive problem. I mean, could it be men versus women? It definitely could be. There's also a lot of black versus white. There's a lot of black versus cop.
Yeah.
There's a lot of refugees and racism with that in Europe.
Yeah, there's a lot of it's insanity. I mean, okay, so who gains? And this is a question, you know, to always ask when we're talking about mind control and behavior modification of the masses is who benefits?
Right.
Who benefits from turning men against women? Who benefits from turning blacks against Mexicans against gays? Who benefits from turning transgenders against Christians and Christians against Muslims? Who, you know, what this is to me is just one big massive distraction.
Yes.
Get us all hating each other and killing each other and bitching and moaning at each other so that what's happening way over here in the corner can just happen, you know,
right,
without any of our interference. And that's really frightening, and people just don't realize that that's what's going on.
You're right, and it totally takes the focus off the biggest criminals, the biggest multinational corporations that are doing nefarious things. They're looking for any scapegoat, any place to shine the spotlight that isn't on them. Don't look at the banking system. Don't look at Monsanto. Don't look at the vaccines. You know, what you need to look at is these Mexicans that are coming across the border. This is your problem, guys. You know, that's what the media is telling us.
Exactly.
And how would you feel if you were Mexican in America and Donald Trump actually had a chance at being president? I mean, you know, you'd probably feel pretty disenfranchised from your neighborhood, I would feel like.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, as a woman,
that too,
the level of hatred that I see coming from people who are actually claiming to be religious is astonishing.
Right.
And you know, also seeing though that some of these people have women supporters. Now, when you see something like that, that is a perfect example of mind control and brainwashing in action,
mm-hmm,
where you can actually have people who support your agenda when your agenda is to destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
That is it. You have, you know, you've reached the pinnacle of your ability to control other people when you can get, when you're a misogynist woman hater with female supporters. You know, what the heck is going on here? And that's just an example of how charismatic these people are. As far as I'm concerned, politicians and a lot of religious leaders are no different than the cult leaders that we've seen on the news. You know,
right.
Tian Do and David Koresh and Charles Manson and Jim Jones and all the rest of them. It's just that these people have a bigger media platform by which to speak from.
Right. And it is definitely funny to see women supporting someone like Donald Trump when he's made so many derogatory statements. But, you know, people vote against their own self-interest all the time. You know, whether it's a woman,
yeah,
voting for a misogynist or a poor person voting for a capitalist like Mitt Romney or Donald Trump. You know, it's kind of funny that people vote against their own self-interest, but it cuts the other way too, because people also want someone who's on their team. So
yeah,
you'll have women supporting Sarah Palin or supporting Hillary Clinton, or black people supporting Obama just because they
black
share,
yeah,
one trait.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
We have to start thinking about the people on our team or the people who think like us, not necessarily share one specific trait, you know?
Right. And what is better for the country as a whole? And here's the thing. You know, people, like you said, people are voting against their own best interest because I truly believe they've been brainwashed. And people,
yeah,
hear that word and they cringe and they think, oh, I saw a Manchurian candidate. This is not that. Guess what? It is.
It is.
But the brainwashers are different. And you know, back in the days of MKUltra, the goal was to learn about brainwashing because our POWs during the Korean War had been brainwashed. And we wanted to know, how can we do that too? And it's, you know, morphed since then. It's grown and evolved into people in our political arena, in our religious arena, in the media, corporate entities. They're all trying to hang on to their own power and their own ability to stay above, you know, the populace.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using so many of the same techniques.
I agree. Do you see the encouragement of patriotism to be another similar form of mind control, implying that one group is better than another because of their geography instead of race or gender.
Well, it is one of those, 14 tenets of fascism, you know, to wrap yourself in nationalism and wrap yourself up in the American flag and carry the cross, and all the while you're preaching hatred and destruction and, you know, killing the poor and taking away health care from people.
Mm-hmm.
It's insanity. And here's the thing. There's so much love and respect in this country for the military, and, you know, rightly so to an extent, that if you speak out and say, but wait a minute, we wouldn't have to worry so much about our military if we would stop putting them in wars that never should be fought in the first place.
Yeah.
So that the rich and powerful could keep getting more rich and powerful. You know, people will just look at you like you're the enemy, even though you're speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's insanity, yeah. And the patriotism, that's a hard one to fight, because what do people do? You're not American.
Mm-hmm.
You must be a Muslim, or, you know, you're anti-American. And yet my understanding from the time I was a kid and paid attention in history class was that to speak out against the ills of your country and its power figures was more American than anything. That's what we were supposed to be all about.
That's true. And
yeah, it's definitely changed.
It has. And you also write a lot about secret societies, too, and the idea that a major tenet is swearing allegiance to the order above all other interests, which, of course, is a technique of total dominance and mind control. But
right.
That also has to be a key factor in some of these groups' successes and rises of power. I mean, how much clout do you think some of these secret societies have in modern times because of that tactic?
I don't know, because I don't know a lot about whether there really is an Illuminati and this, that, or the other thing. But I do know, because it is something provable and something that you can see, that there is a very small group of very powerful people who call the shots. Now, whatever you want to call them, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They operate, again, like a cult, and I think they do use their own laws by which, if you are a part of that secret society, you know, you abide by them, or they'll probably have you killed, or you don't get to be in the big boys club. I'm sure there's a few women, maybe, who knows, but, you know, I think it goes back to this idea that if you're in a secret society, you know, whether it's the Rosicrucians or the Templars or the Order, the Golden Dawn, whatever. The idea of a secret society is that you are elite. You are chosen. You're different from the unwashed masses. And you prove that by accepting the laws, following the rituals, and behaving the way that you are told.
Right.
To stay in good standing in the society. Well, gosh, that sounds an awful lot like church to me. You know, I mean, I don't go to church anymore, but, and I know a lot of churches, I've been in a few, I know a lot of them are really wonderful places, but, I mean, there's a lot of more fundamentalist churches that almost act like a secret society. Mm-hmm. And if you don't abide by the rules, I've had some friends that have escaped the clutches of Calvary Church.
Well, I'm not familiar with Calvary.
Yeah, Calvary, it's not all of them. I don't want to badmouth all of them, but apparently a lot of them operate very rigid standards, and it's almost like Scientology, where if you are in, you're in, and you swear allegiance, and you don't associate, and again, I'm not saying all Calvary churches, but the ones that I've heard about from friends, you don't associate with outsiders, and when you try to leave, oh, wow, they make it very difficult. You can lose everything, your job, mm-hmm. your friends, your, you know, community, your standing in the community, and that's an awful lot like Scientology. So there is that,
yeah.
or trying to leave any cult, there is that same mentality that you belong to us, and if you ever try to gain back control of your own mind, your own thoughts, your own behaviors, we're going to make you pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am a huge critic of religions, of course, and I did grow up Catholic, and luckily I wasn't in something more like Mormonism or Scientology, something that's a lot more oppressive. But, you know, when I was a kid going to church, I, of course, hated it, but it seemed very normal. It just seemed like something people do. And then I went probably 10, 15 years without going, and I had a friend who had a very traditional wedding, and I'm sitting there hearing the chanting, hearing the standing, kneeling, sitting. Everyone's like a zombie. I was like, wow, this is a lot creepier than I remember it as a kid. This is kind of messed up.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was raised Roman Catholic too. I grew up in New York, Italian, you know. And I used to love going to church when I was little because I thought the rituals were beautiful. The candles and the chanting and the, you know, the pomp and the elegance of it. I thought it was beautiful. It was only till I got older and realized what they were saying that I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
But it does show you. And I think that in this situation, those kinds of rituals are meant to put the churchgoers in a little bit of an altered state of consciousness.
Oh, I agree.
You know, I remember, yeah, you know, the chanting and the candles and incense smell, wonderful smells, and it's all supposed to make you feel very peaceful and almost submissive. If you look back on it now, my thought is that it's a way to make people feel more open to getting the message that they were then to get, you know, with the written, the spoken word. But again, a perfect example of the use of ritual to get you in a certain mindset,
right,
so that you then go out and do the biddings of the religious institution that you belong to.
Mm-hmm. And fill up that collection plate. But
Yeah.
We do have to dedicate some time to MKUltra, although I think everyone here will be pretty familiar with the basics. But what are some details you came across researching it that are a little bit deeper that you found most interesting?
Yeah, you know, I figured most of your listeners know the history of MKUltra, why it was formed, who was behind it, what they did. But for me, and I didn't know a lot about it, I really was surprised by how extensive this program was and how many different institutions, over 88 different institutions were involved. And, you know, the origin of some of the methods, and I use that word lightly, coming from Nazi scientists that, you know, were brought over during Operation Paperclip after the Second World War. That's very frightening to think that, you know, and here again is a perfect example of using something so sinister to try to turn it to our benefit and a part of our history that most people don't know about. But what really kind of surprised me was some of the little things that came out. Like there's not a whole lot of proof that this happened, but you know, I was asking Nick Redfern, and I said, "Hey, is there any link between the UFO enigma and MKUltra?" And he said, "Oh yeah, there were some. There's, you know, some elements of MKUltra that may have involved." And I love this, fabricating UFO sightings and close encounter experiences. And that may have been done in the early 1960s, which, you know, was the Exeter, New Hampshire, Betty and Barney Hill incident, that whole time period where the abduction phenomenon kind of was presenting itself.
Yeah.
And just starting to think back on all of the UFO sightings and reports and wondering, okay, now, in addition to all the other theories that are out there as to what this phenomenon might be, now we have to throw this one in.
Yeah.
Fabricated, you know, and I read an article, it was probably about a month ago, and I wish I would have saved it, but I saved, bookmarked so many things, and then I have so many bookmarks, I have to clean them out.
Me too.
But it said something about the military, and I don't know if it was the Army, Navy, whatever, but they had mastered the ability to project into the sky an image, a three-dimensional image of like a fighter jet.
Blue beam, yeah.
And I thought, oh, come on. Okay, first of all, this probably came out of this MKUltra research. Second of all, now does that mean that, you know, in a year from now, because we know how technology is just exponentially advancing so much. So in a year from now, does that mean that we're going to be fighting wars with holographic projections of fighter jets? And it really makes you wonder how much of our history, how much we've experienced, has been manipulated.
Right.
You know, go back to the X-Files with you know, the cigarette smoking man, and this idea that there's been so much manipulation of history. And you hear things like that. One of the other things that really fascinated me was finding out that, like, Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was an MKUltra subject.
Right.
I was blown away by that.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that. So, yeah. And he was young. He was a Harvard undergrad who took part in a psychological study. And a lot of, I don't know if I should say psychologists, but a lot of researchers later thought that perhaps what he experienced during the MKUltra study that he was involved in could have led him to become the way he was,
right.
The Unabomber.
Yeah, totally.
And then hearing about Whitey Bulger, because, you know, there's this Johnny Depp movie coming out where he plays the Irish mobster, and that Whitey Bulger had volunteered when he was a prisoner. I forgot what prison he was in, but and I don't think we wrote about this in the book. I think I found out that later. He had volunteered to be a part of MKUltra, and they were studying apparently a drug that was supposed to be for Alzheimer's.
Hmm.
And he, this toughened, hardened mobster who killed people and, you know, he was just an awful human being, was so drastically and emotionally affected by it that he said, I don't want to be a part of this anymore.
Huh,
that's how traumatic it was.
It's like a Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. So that it was kind of interesting to see, you know, oh, wow, I wonder who else might have been unwittingly involved in these experiments and how many assassination, you know, attempts and successful assassinations were the result of someone who was under MKUltra control or who had been a subject or a victim at some point or another. And, you know, Sirhan, certainly we have tons of links.
Yeah.
That he not remembering what he did and the strange doodlings that he made on his notebooks in prison. And it just really makes you look at history and wonder how much of it was true and how many puzzle pieces are we really missing from our own history.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my prime motivation for doing this show. I love to challenge a little piece of history or piece of science that we take for granted because we were taught it and we're like, well, there's no way that could have been fabricated. And then you're like, well, let's take a look at it. Maybe let's spend 2 hours on the idea that it was. And then who knows what you're going to end up thinking.
And you have to, you know, and again, I always want to know, it's just, I think as a writer and a researcher, and I'm sure you're the same way, I always want to know why. Like, if you fabricate UFO events, if you fabricate alien, you know, experiences, whether it's just somebody seeing something in the sky or an actual full, you know, close encounter of the third kind where there's contact,
mm-hmm.
Who's behind it and what is the motive? Is it just so they can see how far they can push the human mind, or are they planning something? Because this happened in the 1960s. We're now in 2015, and we still don't have any UFO disclosure to speak of. We still haven't had that big, massive invasion that, you know, the entertainment industry loves to write about. So I'm always kind of wary as to, well, what was their real motive and agenda behind some of these experiments? Was it just because they could do them?
Right.
You know?
It is a curious thing. Another thing I want to say about MKUltra, to speak to your point about how vast these projects were and how little we know about them, you do say in the book that in 1973, most of the records were destroyed by the CIA director of the day, but in 1977, 20,000 documents were found that had been misplaced, and you have to assume that that would be just a small fraction of what was out there if they thought they had destroyed everything. I mean, 22,000 documents seems like a lot, but I mean, if you're dealing with 500,000 documents, it's easy to miss 20,000.
Can you imagine? And yeah, Richard Helms, thank you so much for wiping out part of our history. And you know, he was the CIA director at the time who ordered the destruction of the vast majority of documents. And my first question is, what the hell were you hiding?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the documents that did make it through, they're pretty graphic. You know, I imagine that a large majority of them are probably very vague. abstracts and introductions into the research, but some of them out and out list the things that were done. And we're talking all kinds of psychological, sexual, mental, emotional, physical abuse, deprivation, the use of drugs and hypnosis, brainwashing, destruction of original personality to rebuild other personalities, introduce alter personalities, and create assassins and super spies. And so if all of that was made public, I can't even fathom what was in all the documents. I mean, you know, probably if there is that little hint of a UFO connection, there was probably some really interesting things about that.
Right.
You know, fabricating historical events, planning the assassinations of major historical figures. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same way with, like, the UFO field, where so much documentation has been released, but it's just general stuff that we all kind of figured out anyway. And
right.
Just imagining, you know, what has been destroyed. We still don't know who shot JFK for sure.
Right.
So, you know.
We don't know much about our own history. And one really far out a possibility for the motivation for the UFO movement, the whole thing being a fabrication, is people who take the idea of a holographic universe or a simulated reality to its extreme, they say, well, this was an attempt to make our fishbowl look much bigger, you know? And that is a huge can of worms that I think is a really interesting road to go down, but
a rabbit hole.
Yeah, there had to be some kind of motivation. And we also heard, didn't Reagan give a speech where he mentioned an outside invader around the same time, kind of leaving a mental breadcrumb there too? I mean, some people think it was also the idea was to get us to the one world government, because you need an outside enemy that isn't even human.
Yeah, because, okay, like we were talking about earlier, look at us today tearing each other apart over the fact that I have two breasts and, you know, a vagina, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
and guys have other organs, or my skin is white, your skin is black. We've become each other's enemies. But the way that you're really bringing us together under one great grand agenda is to, like you said, you have got to introduce such a powerful external enemy that we all become submissive little lambs. All of us, we all fall in line. Now, that hasn't happened yet, and I don't know if it's because they're just not interested in mm-hmm. taking us over, or because the powers that be haven't planned the grand fabricated event yet. But you are absolutely right. If you truly want to bring, and I'm not just talking about the population of the United States of America. I am talking about if you want to bring the global population to its knees, you introduce an outside threat.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing I could think of. I mean, you know.
Well, it's like they can't pull off the alien thing just yet. Maybe they don't have the full technology or capability to make it believable, so they use ISIS.
There you go. Oh, absolutely. You fabricate an enemy at least that half the world will hate
right. yeah.
and mobilize over, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And this is mass mind control. I mean, it's one thing where you have these government programs like MKUltra, which supposedly ended
right.
officially, I love that word, but, you know, you and I both know, it went on.
Mm-hmm.
It just went deeper underground, deeper black, and probably shattered into a lot of smaller programs with names that we can't even imagine. And I know that there are a lot of people writing about that have wonderful books. You know, they're really digging into that. And I talked to a woman who works in the prison system, and she said, oh, yeah, they're still coming in and experimenting on prisoners, willingly or unwillingly. But
wow.
Yeah. Definitely, that's one form of mind control, and the interpersonal is another. But if you really want power, you go for the mass manipulation,
right?
And hatred, and finding people's differences seems to work a whole lot better than love and light. And
right.
I mean, I guess fear is the prime motivator, and I hate to say that, but it is the truth.
Right. I mean, they say sex sells, but it really doesn't hold a candle to fear and violence.
Absolutely. Sex may sell, but fear is going to get you the power, you know?
Yeah.
Because what is behind, hey, think about it, what's behind the sex sells? That if you're afraid that if you don't buy this product, you're not going to be sexy.
Right.
You're never going to get laid again,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so underneath that is fear that, oh, if I want to be that, I need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, using women and keeping them in a submissive state and using men and making them have to behave a certain way or they're not really men. This is just insanity that we expose ourselves to.
That's true. And they use like only the top most beautiful models for both men and women. So then, you know, when that's the only thing you see in magazines, TVs, movies, you start to feel inadequate about yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. How many times, I mean, I'm older now and I don't give a crap, but I can tell you, you know, as a young woman, I had to fight really hard to not buy into that. And I mean, as a writer, luckily I don't have to really care about being looking like a model, but even then I was affected by it because it's such a part of society. And now I look at girls today that I know, and oh, the pressure, it's insane. And a lot of them end up committing suicide.
That's true.
Doing drugs, you know, cutting and self-abuse. But it's happening to young guys, young boys, too, that there are these standards that are so high.
Oh,
that
yeah.
They have, and what is that? It's like cult mentality. You conform, you do this, and you're going to be one of the golden people. And most of us can't live up to that, you know?
Oh, no. I lived in Pacific Beach, so I know all about feeling inadequate and ridiculously high standards.
But you made your own.
Right. I just stay inside and talk in the microphone.
Yeah, there you go.
So in terms of MKUltra, we have heard about a lot of the players involved, but this guy, Donald Ewan Cameron, he's someone that I don't know if we've ever really talked about at length before. What was his role in MKUltra? He was carrying out a lot of experiments himself, right?
Yeah, he was a pretty nasty figure. And apparently, you know, MKUltra was supposed to be strictly an American program. But there were some strings that were pulled that allowed this, I almost said the word gentleman, but he was not a gentleman at all. He was a Scottish psychiatrist, and he was involved with McGill University in Montreal, and somehow was able to conduct some of the American MKUltra experimentation. I don't know how he did it, if he got his victims or subjects from the American side of the border, but he ended up becoming the most notorious figure associated with MKUltra because of his technique that he had called psychic driving.
Mm.
And psychic driving literally would put the subject into a trance or a coma, almost, you know, like an insulin coma or some kind of drug-induced coma or trance. And he would use this looped tape of his own voice that would put in messages, and he claimed that they were positive and that he was doing this to study ways to help people positively. Yeah, right. But it would just loop memories onto their subconscious mind while they were in this totally submissive state, and it literally reprogrammed their subconscious. Now, I can see that being a really good thing. For example, if you want to quit smoking,
yeah.
You know, your doctor tells you keep smoking, you're going to die. You want to quit smoking. You want to lose weight. You want to get over your fear of socializing or something. We do have things like self-hypnosis and even regular hypnosis that can really help get into the subconscious and clean out some of those fears. But he took his to such an extreme. This is one of the hallmarks of the MKUltra program was the fact that the researchers and scientists were giving carte blanche. Given carte blanche to do whatever they wanted. There were no rules.
Mm-hmm.
There were no guidelines. There were no ethics. So some of the people that allegedly, you know, and later there actually were some payouts, so these people really were his victims, that he experimented on, they were young. They were young girls. They were young kids. He was giving them LSD. He was putting them into deprivation chambers. Sometimes they didn't eat for days. He had what was called a sleep room. It was kind of his little torture chamber.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely took his experimentation to a major extreme.
Right.
And a lot of his work, you know, obviously those declassified documents exposed him. And I know that there were some settlements from the CIA that were eventually made out much later in the 1980s to some of his victims. Was, you know, drop in the bucket compared to what they went through psychologically. But, yeah, he, psychic driving, I mean, maybe. And here again, you have to ask yourself, did he start this out with a true motivation of wanting to help people?
I don't know.
Or was he just, yeah, or was he just one of those mad scientists who they're so focused on what they're doing that their subjects aren't even human to them anymore. They're objects.
Right.
You know, one of the one of his victims, Carol Rutz, she's written a book called A Nation Betrayed, and she claims that, you know, some of the things that he was doing was trying to create assassins and super soldiers, and the, one of the ways that he did that with the psychic driving was to, again, destroy the original personality and program in these alter personalities. And she even had a whole list of, you know, the different levels of programming that were driven in to the person through trigger codes and through the driving, the looped driving tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, another thing about her that was interesting was you mentioned in the book that she was apparently turned over to the CIA by her grandfather at the age of 4, and that's how she got involved in these experiments. I mean, that's dark.
It is, and I have heard so many stories about families that were somehow tied in to some of these researchers or possibly the government itself or the CIA who did do that. Now, whether or not the families knew what was going to happen, you know, we don't know. They may have been told, we're doing some psychological research with young children. It's not going to hurt them. You're going to be paid a bunch of money for their call. You know, I mean, we don't know. But It also could be that they were a part of this. You know, a lot of people think that this was, like, associated with satanic beliefs and satanic ritual abuse. And I don't know. I don't know if MKUltra was linked to that or if that came later and morphed into something on its own. But to give up your child to something like that, to even let your child be a part of that, come on, I'm a mom. I would never in a million years let anybody do that to my son. And yet, there have been times that when my son was younger and he was having some really crazy issues that, you know, I went to the doctor and she said, well, maybe we should put him on Risperdal. And I was so desperate that I thought, okay, well, let's try. Maybe that'll help him. And, you know, 6 months later, I took him off it cold turkey because he became a demon.
Wow.
You know? But I, so I, as a parent, I have to step back a little and say, okay, were they in the same situation where maybe they were told that this is going to benefit other children, and then they realized what happened? I don't know. And in her situation, I think it might have been, you know, sort of a standalone situation. But I did talk to a couple of survivors that said the same thing, that when they were young girls, maybe 8, 9 years, a little bit older, one lived in London, and she said she was taken to America. And I, you know, and I have to take everything people tell me with a grain of salt, but she had a lot of dates and names and statistics, didn't want to be known, didn't want to write a book, didn't want to, she just wanted me to know so that if I heard of other stories, I could put them in touch with, you know. And it was like, do I believe these people? Do I not believe them? Are, you know, what goes on behind closed doors in our own government is more to fear than any ISIS.
Well said.
May or may not exist out there.
Well said.
Oh my God.
Another one of Donald Ewan Cameron's victims that you wrote about was this woman, Val Orlico. She apparently said that, well, what her story is that he had been dosing her with up to 11 doses of LSD at one time, using electroshock therapy to bring her mind to that of a toddler. Apparently, what I thought was interesting about this is she did have a fairly decent recovery, but she was still convinced that this guy was God.
Yeah, talk about brainwashing. And again, what does that remind you of? Cult behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, somebody could be in a cult and they're being sexually abused and they're being beaten and they have all their money taken away from them. But boy, they, you know, it's like Stockholm Syndrome, mm-hmm, or capture bonding, where you actually begin to side with and even fall in love a little bit with your abuser.
Right.
And so the idea of bringing someone back to the toddler mentality means that you can manipulate and recreate them much more so than you can a more adult, fully formed mind.
Right.
And I think maybe, you know, it was a little bit easier to do those god-awful things that he did on someone who was a little bit older, although I doubt very seriously any of these people had any ethics. But, yeah, she was one of the people that received, they got a fairly, well, $750,000 settlement from the CIA. It sounds like a lot of money, but I think when your whole life has been screwed up, probably there's no amount of money that will ever make up for it. But it did help to publicize what had happened. It did help to bring it into the public eye and say, look, you know, this is going on, and here's right, the money that they paid us to shut us up about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Stockholm Syndrome is an interesting one, but, you know, I drive around the Midwest and the South, and I see people that are probably working at the dollar store for three decades with an American flag on front of their trailer. And I'm like, yeah, I think a lot of Americans have Stockholm Syndrome because they say it's the land of the free, but a lot of people don't have much choice about what they do on a daily basis, but yet they're still waving that flag.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a really, you know, very well said, because we are all victims and prisoners, and we're all being subjected to some form of mind control, manipulation. We're under total surveillance all the time. I don't think people realize that either, you know, and yet we're still kind of going through life like tra-la-la, Pollyanna, and right, many people know they're suffering. Like you said, they don't have jobs, they're losing their farms, they, you know, they can't get health care, they're dying of cancer, what have you, but they still are going to vote for that jackass who's going to promise them more of the same.
Exactly.
It's insanity. But I think over time, because I don't think this is the kind of thing that happens over the period of a week. I think over human lifetime, we're bombarded with these different messages and the rhetoric, and eventually it's just total cognitive dissonance, total separation from what's actually happening. And we sort of create this little fantasy world because it's so much easier to deal with, so that we can take care of ourselves and our families and go to our jobs if we're lucky enough to have them, and we can function. And I think that this is like a survivor mechanism to sort of side with your abuser. Mm-hmm. It's easier than trying to fight them. But the problem is, if nobody steps up to fight them, then the abuse just continues.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's really interesting that you've met some victims personally and talked to them about their stories. Are there any other things you can tell us about people you've met who've been victims?
The coolest people that I met were TIs, targeted individuals, that I don't think had anything to do with MKUltra. Again, because MKUltra happened at a very specific time period. So when people say that they are, somebody in their 20s tells me that they were a part of MKUltra, I know that they're not. I know they're misinterpreting. Because that official program ended. However, like I said, it probably didn't end. It just broke into a whole bunch of other programs that are still ongoing. And so one of the more modern, because, you know, that was, 50 years ago? Am I doing my math right? Started in the early 1950s? That was a long time ago. So if you're
65.
A victim of MKUltra, you're older now.
Right.
But some of the younger people that are, you know, claiming that they're targeted individuals, and they're talking about being harassed in these sort of unique ways with microwave pulses and electronic harassment and gang stalking and V2K and all these really interesting, intriguing things that I did not know anything about. That's fascinating to me. I talked to quite a few. Now, I was in the UFO field for a long time. I was a member of MUFON. I actually ran two groups, one in L.A., one in San Diego,
nice.
For over 15 years, back in the 1980s, okay, into the 90s. That was at the time when the abduction phenomena was really rising up again. It sort of rose up in the 60s, disappeared for a while. And then the 1980s, it really exploded. And the reason why I'm talking about this is because I think the two compare perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened then is we started to have people coming to our meetings or calling us. This was before texting and the internet and cell phones and things, when you had to actually contact people, you know, in person. And they were claiming that they've experienced these abductions. And at the time, we didn't know what to do. We didn't know how to handle that. It was a new thing. And we started hearing about what Bud Hopkins was doing and, you know, that there were some people that could do hypnotic regression. And eventually, we had a small group of people that we knew we could trust, that we could turn these people over to at least maybe get a better understanding. We still didn't really know what was happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you that the majority of people... I'm really good at reading people, and the majority were BSing. They either wanted attention, or they were totally misinterpreting what was happening to them,
right.
and applying it to the abduction scenario because it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so jumped now to this whole targeted individual phenomenon, and I see the same thing. There are people that are genuinely being terrorized. There are people that are genuinely suffering the physical results of microwave harassment, psychological harassment. Some of them even know why.
Mm-hmm.
They may be whistleblowers. They may have links to the military or, you know, some kind of secret information. But most of them don't know why and think that they're just guinea pigs for this new technology that's being perfected. But again, a lot of people I can tell right off the bat, they're not true targeted individuals.
Mm-hmm.
They're applying an experience that they're having that you can just tell. Now, I can't prove it, but you got to have really good discernment and gut instinct. But for the very few that are, it's very scary. And interestingly... And Larry, you know, my co-author Larry always laughs at me when I tell him this because he thinks I'm full of crap. But when we were writing the book, I was living in another location. I was living at the top of a hill. And I got really, I'm a ham radio operator. I got really good reception for ham radio, for just everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like in the prime spot. And now I'm down in the on a golf course where I get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. You're lucky you're talking to me. But anyway... For about a two-month period while I was researching the book, I was experiencing almost like electrical pulses that started at the bottom of my feet and went up both legs. And then I would hear voices in my head, or I would hear clicks, tones, pulses, and they sounded like Morse code. They had a very structured pattern to them. And I'm familiar with Morse code. And I thought, wow, you know, just like hypersensitively hearing some ham frequency or something in the air?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this V2K? Is that what this is? Is somebody, because I had been warned by a good friend of both of ours that, you know, I might experience a little bit of harassment if anybody knew I was writing the book.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, please, please, I've written about all kinds of creepy stuff. It actually kept going to the point where I went to the doctor several times because I felt like I was going crazy. I would
Wow.
hear snippets of conversation. I would hear these pulses and tones at night, so I couldn't sleep. My doctor said, you don't have tinnitus. Your sinuses aren't blocked. You know, she just didn't know. My main concern was MS because one of the symptoms of MS is electrical pulses in the legs.
Wow.
You know, we ruled out everything. And I think she thought I was crazy. But when I moved and the book was turned in to the publisher, it stopped. And I've not had it since. Now, I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that it drove me crazy enough that I went to, in fact, I saw my doctor twice. I love my doctor. She's so cool. And so if this is happening to somebody on a daily basis for years, I can imagine how easily it is for them to be emotionally and psychologically crippled, if not physically.
Right.
What a perfect way to control and disable and disempower people.
Mm-hmm.
It's stealth technology that you don't see, you don't hear, you know, you don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah.
It's done remotely. So that was, that just really freaked me out.
Yikes.
In terms of talking to some of the people that I really felt like, wow, this is somebody that I think is really very credible and genuinely terrified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's creepy. That's, I'm glad that it stopped for you at least, but
I'm kind of bummed because I wanted it to keep going. You know, once I thought, well, maybe I know what it is. Maybe I can like find out, you know, where it's coming from.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad it stopped too, because honestly, I couldn't sleep for a long time. But it just was kind of amusing to me that, wow, just when I'm starting that chapter, am I imagining this, you know?
Yeah, placebo effect. All right, well, damn. Marie, we have talked about so much that pretty much brings us to the finish line. This has been a great time talking to you again. The book is very informative, too. Before I cut you loose, would you like to tell the people about any of your other work or anything else you'd like to implant in their brains?
Oh, my gosh. Take back control of your thoughts and don't watch the news. You'll find out what's going on in the world somehow. But, you know, just my website is mariedjones.com, and you can look at all the different books there. And the books are sold on online, brick-and-mortar bookstores, if any exist anymore. And just, you know, don't be afraid of this stuff. As scary as it is, it's you've got to take back your power.
Yeah. Well said. Very awesome. Well, thanks again, Marie. Keep your wits about you out there, all right?
Thank you.
All right, guys. How was that? I know mind control is covered a lot on these types of shows, but I hope we got to some areas and aspects that might have been off the beaten path just a bit. In the first half, I think we got quite a lot done. And then, of course, in the second hour, big pharma, vaccines, mass shootings and mind control's role, consciousness and thoughts themselves, thought waves, the muse concept, entity influence on the mind, mimetic entities, subliminal messaging. I thought it was great. Consider supporting me with that plus show if you don't already. We are deep into September, people, and this is only show 2 of 6 because I did owe you one from last month. And in the past 6 days, I've recorded 3 shows, so it's been very prepare, record, prepare, record. And now I'm getting a chance to do some of that editing and whatnot. So I should be firing them at you pretty quickly. How about that? I do love doing this show, and a topic like mind control really is vast and really is at the center of everything. It starts with consciousness, you know? I mean, look at the money magic they use. It's mind control. It is a religion. People structure their whole lives around how much green paper they're going to have or how to get that bank account up to the new high score. It's nuts, and I was lucky that I grew up a spoiled only child who always pretty much got his pathetic little way, but I had the foresight to at least see that gravy train ending as I got older and had to move out of the house, and I never really cared about the rat race. I always wanted my time and freedom more than I wanted that paycheck. I always felt like I was being dragged along because everybody else was. And of course, we're all kind of forced to. I mean, how many people would be completely screwed if you just went 1 month without making money? 1 month of your life, and it could all be over. Or how many of us are one accident away from complete financial ruin? We all know this, but it's the lack of questioning or consideration of alternatives to the dog-eat-dog capitalist system that really feels like the tightest grip on the modern mind to me. One of my favorite conspiracies shirt designs that I had, and all of them are pretty much gone now, was the What's After Capitalism. I resisted the temptation to go full anti-capitalism and just asked a simple question. And the conversations that would start always seemed to be, well, what we have now is crony capitalism, and if we could just get back to a free market, things would be better, and yeah, yeah, yeah. I would just laugh, because when you've invested your whole life in a system, some people get real emotional about defending it. They just have to say something to me in the checkout line. They can't just let it go or ignore it. And I would always say, well, this shirt doesn't say capitalism is bad. It just has to do with being curious about what comes next. Is there a greater evolution? Power pyramid, spider beings, and reptilian string pullers aside, Shouldn't society constantly be fine-tuning and optimizing itself? And the blank stares I would get in response, just the audacity to think that there could be a step beyond capitalism. It's insulting to some people. But I feel like my phone has gotten more major updates in the past couple of years than the structure that our society is built on. It's kind of messed up. That's why I always roll my eyes at Constitution talk, too. And I can just feel the energy of some of you getting down into the attack crouch right now. But when people parrot the same old lines about getting back to what the forefathers wanted or restoring the Constitution, I just want to scream at them about not looking to the 1700s for the best ideas of today. Aren't there smart people around now that could maybe make a better Constitution or a better guideline for human life? It's a different world now. Leave the Constitution alone. Half the people in Congress now don't even know how to use a computer, and some of you want to look 200 years before that for a model? Get out of town. Well, that's the ramblings of your humble stoner host, nobody's favorite part of the show. Hope you had a good time with Marie today, and I'll see you soon. Your move, targeters of individuals and electronic harassers, your frickin' move.
Sweet dreams to the elite, we're calling them out on THC, uncovering secrets and conspiracies. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused. Abuse you. Some of them want to be a